This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
I'm Brian Tetta, executive producer of The View. It's Tuesday, and I'm here with Alyssa Farah Griffin. This is Behind the Table. Hello, Alyssa. How are you?
Hello, Brian. I am excellent.
All right. It is Tuesday. It feels more like a Thursday or a Wednesday, but it's Tuesday. Yesterday was the big news, the eclipse. It could not have been promoted more. It could not have been a bigger deal. Then it happens. Now, was this a highlight for you or kind of a nothing burger?
Okay. I loved it. I loved the hype. I loved that there was something positive and science and like out of our control that the world was uniting around. I mean, yes. ABC, CNN were wall to wall and the coverage was fun. When I put on the glasses and actually saw it at the start, it reminded me of the first time that I looked through a telescope in like elementary school and was like, oh my gosh, like it does kind of blow your mind. However, I have a gripe. I think I got budget glasses. I had the most crucial headache. Like, I felt terrible the rest of the day. I also kept going back to look and see the progress.
You can't, yeah. I mean, you also have to, like, did you look at all without the glasses?
No, I didn't Donald
Trump it.
My husband kept reminding me. So that was one thing. And then I was very paranoid about my dog because I read that animals can react poorly because at the peak of it, like, birds won't, you know, chirp. And I saw actually a dog walking. He was like, ears were back and his tail was down. So I closed all the blinds and was just like, don't open. Don't let Herbie out. And it was a little anticlimactic on the Upper East Side because there was also a big cloud that came right at the peak. Still fun, though. I like a day when we can talk about anything other than
politics
and drama and wars and chaos. And it was cool.
I agree with that. I kind of was hoping it would get darker.
That was a little bit of a bummer.
Yeah. I mean, I understand that we weren't in the total eclipse part, but at the same time, I thought it would feel more like night as opposed to a cloudy day, which is kind of what it felt like.
Correct. We got to watch on TV as other places got a kind of full eclipse. Yeah. But it also, I felt like there was an eerie feeling in the air. My husband and I were walking around like maybe an hour or so before, and there is something about when like natural phenomena are happening that you things just kind of feel different. So the whole day I was like, I feel a little off kilter. Then I don't even believe in astrology. Started reading about like the zodiac impacts and all that.
Yeah, apparently like for certain signs, it's very significant. I don't know if you were one of those
signs. It is. We Gemini are going to have a very a very disruptive month. So let's hope it's not related to the show.
Are you a horoscope follower in general?
So literally not at all. I personally don't buy it. But the one time that I read a horoscope, I felt like it was very detailed and thoughtful. Part of it was about an incredibly important relationship coming into my life. And Justin and I got together like a month later. Ooh. So it's like, maybe there's a little bit of wisdom in the stars.
I think I've told this story before, but in college, I was in charge of writing the horoscopes for the school paper. And I just made them up and used them to manipulate people in my life without them knowing.
To get girls to go on dates with you?
Yeah, a little bit. Like, you know. That guy you see is only a friend. Maybe look at him in a different way. Yeah.
Amazing.
It kind of worked. All right. Speaking of natural phenomena, we had the earthquake on Friday. Now, you grew up in California. So when something like that happens, does it affect you at all? Or is this something you're just used to?
So this might be counterintuitive because I'd been in one fairly, I mean, big for me earthquake in California growing up. Only one that I remember. I guess I was in one when I was very small. But you always heard of very disruptive ones. And if you go through San Francisco, you see all, you know, the damage and even graves from very bad ones. I would have thought that that would have made me less reactive and be like, oh, this isn't a big deal. The second I felt it and my hair and makeup didn't feel it, I was terrified because it was, you just don't know initially, like, is it going to get worse? So for about 30 seconds, I was very scared. And the DC 2017 one, which I think was like a 5.5, it wasn't actually a huge deal, but I was in a high building and felt it. But then what was scary is no one's cell phone worked for about an hour. So everyone, like, they cleared out the congressional buildings, the Capitol was evacuated, and you couldn't reach anyone. And that was kind of an unnerving part. That luckily did not happen in New York. My biggest fears are natural phenomena, like a natural disaster thing, because it's so outside of your control.
Right.
Like, I feel like, you know, I don't know, like in a slasher movie, you have a chance against the guy. Mm-hmm. Like, you can try to fight for it. You don't have a chance against nature.
You've got a Final Girl vibe to you. I think you could survive. I think you'd have a shot at that. Scream 12 or something. Yeah. All right. I agree. I was above my office. Over here is right above the studio. And sometimes when, like, the warm-up's happening and they're playing music, mm-hmm. I feel things shake a little bit. And for a minute, that's what I thought had happened. But then suddenly stuff started falling off the shelves. And I was like, okay, this is actually an earthquake. Mm-hmm. This is weird.
And not to be morbid, but I think in New York, too, with, like, you know, 9/11 and terrorism, your mind can quickly go to bad places. But the good thing was it ended as quickly as it started. I mean, I think it was maybe 30 seconds that it even lasted, that you really felt it.
Wow. All right. Well, we discussed also on the show today, this is not a natural phenomenon, but this is another thing we're talking about. Former VP Mike Pence and Senator Lindsey Graham spoke out about Trump punting abortion rights to the states. Now, you called Trump's stance a gift to the Democrats, and you said that Republicans are like the dog who caught the car, which is a nice analogy. Were you surprised by any of this?
Okay, so let me reframe a little bit. Donald Trump's actions around abortion coming down in the Dobbs decision were a gift to Democrats.
Okay.
Taking down Roe was. I reluctantly think that his decision to punt to the states it's the most politically savvy thing he can do. And I say that because he's incredibly boxed in on this issue. He doesn't have many ways to shift right. it in a way that's politically favorable. But he is very good at punting blame. So what it allows him to do is to one audience be like, listen, New York, you still have access. Oh, Florida, take it up with the legislature and Ron DeSantis. Mm-hmm. And you're going to see him do this, speaking out of both sides of his mouth. And what it does is it puts the onus on Biden's campaign and the Democrats to consistently message and remind people he is responsible for this, even if he's saying, I'm actually moderate on the issue and we need to find something that works for everyone. But what's fascinating to me, oh, and actually one other thing on this. You heard it here first. I expect that Trump is going to start saying on the campaign trail, Joe Biden's not going to restore your reproductive rights. He's president right now, and he's not able to restore them. He's not going to be able to change the makeup of the Senate to pass anything, and he's not going to be able to fundamentally change the Supreme Court. He's technically right, but that argument is steeped in a lot of issues. But I do know to a lot of voters that might kind of resonate.
Mm-hmm.
But Donald Trump ultimately is the biggest loser on the issue of abortion. He's getting hit from what I would say the left by Lindsey Graham, the ultimate sycophant who's just really very, very rarely broken with Trump, criticizing him for not doing 15 weeks. 15 weeks is a loser. It's actually intellectually and ideologically close to where I am, like 15 to 20 weeks. But to put it into law allows half the country to say you're banning abortion and the other half to say you're permitting and legalizing abortion up to this period. It just doesn't work.
Help him.
And it also has no votes. It's never happening. It's not happening in the near future. Pence is interesting. Pence is one of the few politicians left who actually has core beliefs. He, like many Christian Catholics, believes as fundamentally as they believe in, like, the right to breathe, that abortion is wrong. Now, regardless of your viewpoint, I respect people who have consistent fundamental beliefs that they don't waver on. And mm-hmm. this is one that he and many on the religious right won't. And this is a little different than the evangelicals who, like Tim Alberta talked about, who actually church attendance is down, but political activism is up, where being an evangelical is more of, you know, what you support politically. Diehard, dedicated, committed Christians, this is something that for some is a very big issue. And Pence speaking out and people like Lila Rose, who's a very prominent activist, as forcefully against Trump, that could cause some folks who've had their own issues with Trump to say, I don't feel like either of these candidates are reflecting my values.
Well, so Lila Rose is, as you mentioned, a pro-life activist who is one of the core people
immovable on this issue, but commands tremendous respect for the people who really fundamentally believe this.
She rose something yesterday that was an interesting question that I imagine people are going to ask Trump now, which is, he's a resident of Florida. How is he going to vote on the 6-week abortion ban?
Oh, that is a great question.
Is he going to I mean, what is his position? He's going to have the opportunity to vote yes or no on that, mm-hmm. which will give an insight into his personal beliefs mm-hmm. and will be used against him either way.
Yeah.
So I imagine he'll just avoid answering it as long as he can. But
right.
if they put the screws to him, I'm curious.
Yeah. And you know, do you believe life begins at conception? He's dodging the most fundamental questions for this entire issue. And I think he's going to be able to successfully do it for quite a while. But mm-hmm. there will be these groups like Lila's that hold his feet to the fire on it. And it could hurt him with his base, who may be tired of him, maybe wanted someone else, and passionately believe this issue.
And if there ever are presidential debates, it's an opportunity, I think, for
huge opportunity for Biden.
Yeah, for Biden to put the screws to him, too. We'll be right back.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Step into the world of Hollywood like never before with Melissa Rivers' Group Text podcast. Melissa, renowned for her red carpet expertise and storytelling prowess, invites you to join her and her famous friends for hilarious and heartfelt conversations. From discussing the latest binge-worthy TV shows, navigating the highs and lows of life, and dissecting celebrity fashion, there is never a dull moment. With exclusive stories from special guests like Chelsea Handler, Cheryl Hines, your favorite reality stars, and deep dives into intriguing topics like the Where is Wendy Williams documentary, this podcast offers an insider's look into the glitz and glam of Tinseltown. It's not just Melissa's podcast. It's a collective experience where you're invited to join the conversation. So if you've ever wanted a peek behind the Hollywood curtain, subscribe to Melissa Rivers' Group Text podcast now on your favorite platform. Get ready for laughter, tears, gossip. In other words, unforgettable moments that'll keep you coming back for more. Don't miss out. This is one Group Text you won't want to exit. Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, we have a listener question for you from Richard in Washington State. I'm a retired 20-year veteran and retired after 22 years in the airline industry. My question is, why do conservatives with middle or low incomes feel Donald Trump gave them more than Joe Biden? I support Biden, but what was better during Trump's time in office for middle and low income folks like me?
Such a good question. It's actually one I get asked quite frequently. So I put it into two categories. I do think that in the Trump era, he's messaged to working class voters a bit better than Democrats have. Even though he couldn't be less actually able to relate to them, he talks about issues that they care about. It's, you know, talking about your jobs being offshored abroad, talking about made in America, buy in America, talking about border security is an issue. Whether you live anywhere near the border, it has to do with it affects every, you know, working industry that you're in, the restaurant industry, hospitality, agriculture industry and so on. And I think they hear someone who's talking about things that they care about and gravitate toward that. A couple things I will give him credit on, but I frame it more as Republicans. It went through the Senate. Some of it was bipartisan. But USMCA, changing how we did trade in this country, impacted some of these lower income jobs for people, largely in the agriculture sector, but affected the auto industry as well. And Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, this is one that's it's a hot button issue because, yes, he did cut taxes for higher income earners, but he massively cut taxes for the lower income earners. And the average family saved about $4,200 under that tax reform policy, which is still in effect now. I think we have to do way more. I think we have to completely rework our tax system, and it should always absolutely favor the lower income, not the higher income earners. But I think those are the things that they see in him. I think that Democrats in many ways do more for lower income, whether it's lower income voters, whether it's, you know, protecting Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare. But they often come off and talk like elitists. And this has been something that has been a critique of mine for a long time. If you didn't get a 4-year degree, you don't feel, even if you didn't get a 2-year degree, you don't feel helped by student loan forgiveness. You may not have a problem with someone getting it, but you say, where is my home loan forgiveness or where is my small business loan forgiveness? I didn't even have the opportunity to go to college, which is about a third of Americans. Or if there's such a priority put on what advanced degrees somebody has and you're treated as like you are valued more because you went to this elite institution, I think it can draw divides. Biden is probably actually the best messenger on it when he gets into like Scranton Joe mode and talks to more like union working America.
Right.
But I would say the Democrats writ large can fall into the trap of coming off elitist. And I think that can off-put that segment of voters.
Well, this reminds me of the topic we did last week. It's are we better now than we were 4 years ago? And you mentioned that you didn't bring up what it was like for you 4 years ago. I mean, in 2020. Tell me more about that.
Well, I was thinking, I was kicking myself because I decided to look back on that exact date and where I was. And my criticism of Republicans is this. Argue about Trump's presidency pre-COVID if you want to. If you want to say the economy was better, there were record stock market gains, whatever it may be. But don't say 4 years ago. I looked up the exact date. I was working at the Pentagon, and I had literally put out a statement knocking down this Chinese government-based misinformation that was basically saying that COVID originated in the United States and all these just completely false theories. And I had to put it out from the official U.S. government account to say this is not true. Simultaneously, there was disinformation going around. People were getting texts, millions of Americans on their cell phones saying the U.S. Army was going to be nationalized to enforce federal lockdowns.
Oh, man.
It was panic zone in the Pentagon. We were like, we have to knock this down. There was no plan to do that, no discussion. So it was pretty much like the most chaotic moment easily in my lifetime in America. On top of that, you had an average of like 3,000 deaths a day. And I remember this because it was when the number of deaths, it was in March when the number of deaths surpassed the deaths on 9/11. And to me, as like a child during 9/11, and that was the most significant memory I had, I was like, wow, that really put it into context. Then to think about the fact that then over 1 million people lost their lives to COVID. It is such a mistake to not take seriously how every single American was impacted by the pandemic and the hurt, the scars, the challenges that they're still overcoming from it. So to me, like, it's just political malpractice to remind people of probably the most horrible moment in American history or one of them in a lifetime of someone my age.
We have, a collective kind of amnesia. So the 4 years ago question is always interesting because do you really remember where you were 4 years ago most of the time? Do you really remember what you had in the bank 4 years ago or where you are? Because it all kind of blurs. You and I were talking a couple minutes ago about how it feels like it should be, it doesn't feel like it should be Tuesday. It should be Thursday. I can't remember who was on the show on last week. It's one of those things where when you really ask someone to do that. But in this case, we kind of remember.
I mean, I was legit hoarding toilet paper with my then fiance who I just moved in with in a one bedroom in D.C. And I just remember, like, you get close quickly when you run out of essential products.
Like, I was coming to Manhattan and there were body bags on the street. I mean, it was a scary, scary time. It was really, really, I mean, the hospitals were backed up. It was an awful time. So I don't have any trouble remembering that. But I do think people just, they don't always think about that. They think about what they paid for at the pump for gas. And that's really what it comes down to.
And groceries is
and what vacation they took or what.
And by the way, it doesn't help. Sorry, I've said this 1,000 times. It doesn't help that Trump runs away from the vaccine that he helped get, that he, through Operation Warp Speed, helped develop and rush through.
Right.
And then what was responsible ultimately for ending the pandemic.
Doesn't help with independence, but it might help with the base. I don't know.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, really interesting. All right. Well, that's enough politics. Let's talk Bravo. Let's do it. Summer House. Amanda is ready to move out of the city and start having kids while her husband Kyle doesn't want to. He feels like his identity will be lost in the suburbs. Now, this is something relatable. I'm a suburban dad and you are moving to the suburbs.
I am. Okay. First off, Summer House quickly becoming my favorite franchise. And I didn't feel that way early on, but love Amanda and Kyle, love Paige. This was interesting to watch because it's kind of the reverse of where my husband and I started. The woman really wanting to get to the suburbs, Amanda, and Kyle, who's got like a big job in the city, not wanting to. I was actually, or my husband was ready to move to the burbs a year ago. And I was like, I need to do New York a little bit longer. This is, these 2 years I've been here is the first time I lived in the city. I always visited, but I wanted, I'd never lived outside of a major city since before college. But when we started looking at homes, we were both in the place. We were like, we're ready. For me, it was about space, safety, my dog having a yard, and like not always hearing each other breathe in the other room.
Right.
I think it's very important to be on the same page with a major change like that, because there is going to be a moment where I wake up and I'm in the suburbs and I don't know a lot of people in the community. My brother and sister-in-law are nearby, but where it's like it's just you and your partner and the dog, and you have to be okay with that.
100%, especially when you have kids, you have a forced social network mm-hmm. through school and things like that. But I remember when we first moved to the suburbs, it's isolating in a mm-hmm. lot of ways. I mean, we worked, we came home, and then we were, there.
Did you want to go to the burbs? I can't remember.
I did. I moved for my dog. I bought a chocolate lab living in a one-bedroom apartment mm-hmm. in Manhattan, and then very quickly realized we needed more room. And we ended up moving to the suburbs and eventually had kids, but we yeah. mostly did it for the dog.
I mean, same, honestly. That's like the light at the end of the tunnel ahead of the move is I'm like, he's going to have a yard. It's going to be so amazing for Herbie.
Yeah, but I'm incredibly basic. Like, I'm good with going to Applebee's and Chili's mm-hmm. on the weekend and going to see a movie. And I didn't mind having that kind of suburban thing.
We also, you and I have the best of both worlds because we do have to come into the city every day for the show.
Right.
So it's like if there's any day that we want to stay and see a show or try a new restaurant, it's a lot easier to do. My husband largely works from home, though he travels a bunch. He's up between D.C. and Boston. And I've told him, I was like, if you ever start to feel like, oh, gosh, we feel like we're middle-aged and in the burbs, anytime, meet me in the city and we could do a night in New York.
Where it's rough is just when you're in the city, like when you work, you hang out, you go to a Broadway show and dinner, and then it's 11:30 at night and you're like, oh, I have to commute now and then come back and commute in the morning. That's the tough part. But
Sarah Haynes was saying there's a strong temptation to get hotel rooms when you come into the city.
There definitely
and
is.
Then that adds up.
Oh, it adds up quick, believe me. All right, so one more Bravo question here. Still staying with Summer House, Carl and Lindsay's relationship. What is your take on it now that you're seeing more of the show?
So to catch you up, they infamously, they were supposed to get married this past November, and it was announced maybe a month or two before the wedding that they'd called it off. Mm-hmm. And they're completely broken up. It's not like we're going to work on things. And he was kind of being framed as the villain. They were kind of trying to make it like she was the new Ariana, had been done wrong by a man. And as you're watching it unfold, it's just not the case. And I credit him for kind of staying silent and letting it play out. So Carl is sober, and he'd wrestled with his addiction issues throughout the series, but he's been sober for several years. And you see how it cannot work when you have somebody who drinks a lot mm-hmm. With a partner who's trying to stay sober. And you see it unfold. I believe fundamentally, because I have addiction in my family. I think that a partner who socially drinks can easily be married to somebody who's sober. I don't think you can do the binge drinking, the shots, the culture of drinking with someone who's sober. It's just, it's not fair to them. Like what we were always taught, I would go to Al-Anon growing up to support my sister. And what we were always taught is you could be 10 years sober and you could lose it in one day.
Right.
You could be 20 years. So it's you need a partner who's there every step of the way with you. And it's no judgment to her. It's just simply from an outsider, you totally see why it's not going to work.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I'm excited. I might try and watch some of this
try
stuff.
Try it.
Just,
I think
just
you'd like
to prep for you.
Okay. Because I also think if we're bookings are slow at some point, some of these Bravo cast members are worth having on. They're fun TV. They're used to it. It's
all right.
See.
Producers are nodding from the yeah. control room. I will try. For me,
just don't replace me with any of them.
I will not. My issue with reality shows is always because I'm a television producer and I feel like I always see the producer's hand in reality shows.
I was going to say, don't worry. You guys still exist in reality
TV. No, I know. Believe me, I know. And it makes it not fun for me because I watch The Bachelor and I'm like, oh, a producer told us.
That actually makes so much sense.
I just see the strings and that's the stuff that makes it less fun for me to watch.
That's a very interesting take. That does make sense. Why? Yeah.
That's it. And my wife was a reality show casting producer.
Okay, see.
So,
no, I can suspend reality and it's all real to me.
Exactly. So there you go. All right. Well, thank you for joining me, Alyssa. Tomorrow, I'll be back with Joy Behar. In the meantime, if you have a question or want advice from me or a co-host, check the episode description for the number to our Behind the Table hotline. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Step into the world of Hollywood like never before with Melissa Rivers' group text podcast. Melissa, renowned for her red carpet expertise and storytelling prowess, invites you to join her and her famous friends for hilarious and heartfelt conversations. From discussing the latest binge-worthy TV shows, navigating the highs and lows of life, and dissecting celebrity fashion, there is never a dull moment. With exclusive stories from special guests like Chelsea Handler, Cheryl Hines, your favorite reality stars, and deep dives into intriguing topics like the Where is Wendy Williams documentary, this podcast offers an insider's look into the glitz and glam of Tinseltown. It's not just Melissa's podcast. It's a collective experience where you're invited to join the conversation. So if you've ever wanted a peek behind the Hollywood curtain, subscribe to Melissa Rivers Group Text Podcast now on your favorite platform. Get ready for laughter, tears, gossip. In other words, unforgettable moments that'll keep you coming back for more. Don't miss out. This is one group text you won't want to exit.